20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Always, always, always appreciate you guys joining me. If you haven't had a chance yet, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Helps out the channel a ton and just takes a bare minimum amount of time. But as always, the biggest thing is, again, thanks so much for being here. Today, we're going to be going over the big topic. This is the one I talked about, about a week ago, maybe a little bit more, that we would do as soon as the season was done. If need be, if it wasn't obvious at this point, what was going to happen with Matt. And that is the case for keeping Matt LaFleur and the case for moving on from Matt LaFleur. So we're going to take a deep dive into that today and look at both sides of the argument. And I think there are some fair arguments to be made on both sides. So we'll get into that in much, much, much greater detail. And I'm sure a lot of you have made up your minds already. And no matter what I would say today, maybe you're not going to view the other viewpoint as fondly or as kindly. But I'm going to do my best to, again, make the argument for both sides so that anyone that maybe is on the fence or maybe is just, you know, slightly one way or the other could maybe be swayed by either side. I'm not trying to convince you one way or the other. It's, again, just laying out both sides and letting you guys kind of decide for yourself. We'll get into a lot of that. A lot had happened on Monday that I do want to get to before we get to our main topic. First of all, Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers lose. I don't want to go too long because this is, again, a Packers podcast, not a Steelers podcast, but Aaron Rodgers may have played, in all likelihood, played his last game in the NFL. And, you know, if that is the case, it's super unfortunate that he throws a pick six on the final play of his career in the playoffs. It was an inconsequential play. The game was over by that point anyway, but still not exactly the way that you want to, you know, go out at the very, very end. But, I would say overall, a fairly successful Pittsburgh Steelers, sort of year. They make the playoffs, but it get eliminated right away. You know, your mileage may vary on how you feel about that stint with Pittsburgh. The Jets one was obviously an unmitigated failure, injury, and then the Jets are just the Jets. And then, of course, a just beyond legendary career in Green Bay. But if this is it for Aaron, unbelievable career. To me, prime Aaron is still in the conversation with anybody as the best thrower of the football, quarterback, etc., in the history of the NFL. He is a Hall of Famer. He's a Packers Hall of Famer. He is an all-time great. He is any accolade you basically want to give him. He's got it. He is it. Multiple-time MVP. Like, just an astounding, astounding NFL career. What an accomplishment for him. He deserves to go out and be done if that's what he wants. Just don't go be a Minnesota Viking next year, please. But what a remarkable career. Owner of the Chicago Bears, of course. And like I said, I think overall, a pretty amazing final stint. You know, thankfully, he did not get to beat all 32 teams. Green Bay did get in his way for that. And he was not able to beat the Packers earlier this year to pick up that win against the 32nd franchise, but accomplished pretty much everything else there was to accomplish. And kudos on an unbelievable career and so many memories that I certainly will never forget for the rest of my lifetime. So congratulations if that is it, Aaron. Sorry that it did not end the way that I'm sure you would have wanted it to. But again, what a freaking legendary career for the one and only Aaron Rodgers. By the way, at the end of that game or in the press conference, not what I expected. He gets asked about, you know, Mike Tomlin and the situation in Pittsburgh and things like that. And he went on pretty lengthy about not only Mike Tomlin, but brought up Matt LaFleur and said it's a joke that either of these guys are on the quote unquote hot seat, said it wouldn't happen when he started his career and those sort of things, but had some pretty effusive praise for Matt LaFleur and thought it was ridiculous that, you know, Matt, and I'm paraphrasing a lot of this and just kind of, you know, taking what he said overall, but, you know, you could tell he thought it was ridiculous that he thought that this is even a question that Matt LaFleur was on the hot seat. So a ringing endorsement for Matt LaFleur from his former quarterback, which is pretty remarkable because, you know, especially towards the end, you could never quite get a feel. It always seemed amicable between Matt and Aaron, but you could never quite get that feel if it was ever really, truly connected. I do feel like sometimes with Aaron, there is this, you know, distance makes the heart grow fonder sort of aspect to him. Like, it feels like he really didn't like MVS when MVS was in Green Bay. But now, like, this stage of his career, his last tug in the tunnel is for MVS. He wanted to bring MVS back. There were the rumors earlier this year that Pittsburgh wanted to bring Romeo Doubs in, and that was somebody that Aaron wanted them to bring over. It didn't feel like Romeo and him were ever, you know, quite on that same page, you know, early on in Romeo's career. But it does feel like, you know, maybe sometimes when he's gained a little distance and sees how other things are, he does have a little bit more fondness or whatever. But either way, pretty cool for him to do that and just, you know, talk about Matt and saying, hey, and just kind of back him and saying, I don't think you should be on the hot seat. Obviously, he talked about Tomlin very similarly, but an interesting endorsement there for Matt LaFleur from Aaron Rodgers. Now, the big news, of course, from Monday is that early in the day, Adam Schefter tweeted and said that the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are going to be working together on a contract extension, that they are going to get together, negotiate this thing, and work to see if they can get to terms on an agreement of a new deal. There are layers to this and what this means. The first thing that I would think that this means, and I think we can be pretty clear on it, is that the Packers are not firing Matt LaFleur. All right. If you are getting into a negotiation room together, you have clearly made the decision that you are willing to negotiate a deal for Matt LaFleur, that you still want him as the head coach of your team. I've seen some things where it's like, well, maybe they're trying to, you know, negotiate a deal that they know he's never going to accept, and then he's going to want to leave, and then they don't have to fire him. That's not how Green Bay operates. I don't think that that's how Ed Policy is going to come into this. And it does feel like legitimately Policy and LaFleur have a good relationship. I don't think he's going to secretly bring him into a meeting room only to lowball him and tick him off and just end up in that. That doesn't seem like anything that would happen in that situation. But just because, and I've talked about this, so I apologize if I sound like a broken record for those of you who have heard me say this before, just because they are not firing him, and just because these two are getting in a room together to negotiate terms of a potential extension, does not mean that they will come to terms on that possible extension. And the reason why this is such a very unique and interesting scenario is because Matt LaFleur has 1 year left on his deal, which is below market value. It's because Ed Policy has gone out of his way. One of the first things he said is that he does not want to have a coach in a lame duck year, which means 1 year left on the contract. So this is a rubber meets the road moment. Ed Policy's already said, I don't want to have a coach in a, you know, 1 year contract remaining on his deal going into the season. So that's not an option. And it wouldn't have been anyway for Matt. But the crazy thing here, and we've talked about it, is, okay, they've now made the decision, we're not going to fire Matt. But Green Bay could easily say, hey, we'll talk all of the reasons here in just a moment of why they may not want to extend Matt LaFleur with some crazy lucrative deal, including some of the winning percentages as of late, the not winning playoff games, 5 losses in a row to end this season, and so on and so forth. Again, we'll go through all these talking points momentarily, but they can point to that and say, yeah, we want to extend you, but we're going to give you a 1 year extension or a 2 year extension, and or it's going to be around, you know, 10, 11 mil per year. And Matt LaFleur on the other side, despite having some losses as of late and not having the playoff wins and not advancing past the NFC Championship in his career, can look at it and say, there are 8 openings right now. I have connections in Atlanta. I have connections in Tennessee. I have connections in Miami. I can go and get right now a new 4-year, $63 million deal. And on top of that, I get new job security. I'm the new shiny toy in town. Like, I get a fresh coat of paint, and I'm not going to be on the hot seat there. I might be on the hot seat here. I'm not going to be on the hot seat there. So no, your +1 contract or your 2-year contract under market value isn't going to fly. If you're going to re-sign me, at minimum, it's going to take a 3-year, $48 million extension. And Green Bay might say, we can't do that. We are not willing to go that high on an extension. And if that ends up being the case, you end up in this real rubber meets the road moment where Matt LaFleur can easily get that on the open market, and the Packers say, we don't want to pay you that. And if that happens, then you go the route, in all likelihood, of saying Matt has the right to seek a contract with another team, and if so, they will work out compensation with that team. And that could easily still happen. I would expect that based on this, if Matt LaFleur wants to be the head coach of the Packers and the Packers want him back, that I would say about 90% likelihood that this is going to get done and they'll figure it out. But I do not think it's a completely foregone conclusion that he is a Packers coach this year, just because of exactly what we just mentioned. There is some really, I'm sure, difficult gray area to negotiate there. And that's something that they're going to have to get through. And they're going to have to kind of get through it in a short period of time, because if Green Bay cannot come to an agreement with Matt LaFleur, they need to get in on this coaching search now. Like, the time is already ticking and they don't have the ability. We'll see what happens with Mike Tomlin now. That also feels like it might be done in Pittsburgh. So that could be a ninth head coach opening. And if you get rid of Matt, that's 10. So I think you'd have to make that decision very, very quickly. So the time is ticking for Green Bay, and these negotiations are going to have to kind of warp speed to get this done as soon as possible to try to figure out what Green Bay wants to do moving forward if they can't get that contract negotiated. But again, the big news from Schefter, and this is matched what Rappaport has said, and it's matched what other people have said, that this is seemingly these two sides working together collectively to find a way to get an extension done in Green Bay. Meanwhile, we had a lot of stuff from locker room cleanout. And the first piece of news was about Zach Tom and that he has a partially torn PCL. And that is not a good thing. Now, the good news is it's partially torn, not fully torn, but PCLs tend to give anybody, but offensive linemen as well, some real trouble. He's going to have surgery. It sounds like he's going to have surgery soon. And if everything goes well, which with PCL surgeries, you just don't know, it would be a 6-month recovery time. That would be on the good side of things. If that's the case, and he can get back in 6 months, you can do the math. It's January 13th today. 6 months from now would be July 13th, and that gets you in before training camp. Even if it's 7 months, right? All right, well, now you're at August 13th, and you're still in training camp, and you're in preseason. So you have the opportunity, if this goes, even remotely well, even if it's a month behind schedule, you're still coming back in the preseason during training camp, getting ready and hopefully ready for week one. But a PCL injury is a very scary injury for anybody, but certainly an offensive lineman. And that will be one to really monitor as he comes back, hopefully in time for training camp, but to see, how he's looking around that time, what he's doing. Is he just doing individual drills, and can he ramp up and get ready to be a full Zach Tom like we really need for the Packers in 2026? So a huge injury to keep an eye on there. What else happened in the locker room? Well, the first thing was the players were effusive in their praise of Matt LaFleur and stating that basically beyond wanting him back. Like, this was above and beyond. There's always the conversation here of like, well, what are they supposed to say? No, I hate the guy. No, get rid of him. He should have been fired months ago. No, nobody's going to say that. But, I know what Jason Wilde said was this was, in the locker room, it felt above and beyond. Like, there's the comment of like, yeah, we're going to see what's going to happen. And, I've enjoyed my time here in Green Bay with Matt. And, there's ways that you can say it without saying it, so to speak. But this was over the top. Some examples. Tucker Kraft says, I don't think there's another coach who can come in here and do it as well as he does. I think Matt is an outstanding coach. Micah Parsons said, I reached out to him when I started seeing this, and I said, when I agreed to come here, you were part of the reason. Jordan Love, Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, you can go on and view the videos online and see the quotes. The key players, the core players on this team that were asked about this, Jaden Reed, were again effusive in their praise of Matt LaFleur and wanting him back. So if again, you want to, just sort of shrug that away and say, what else are they going to say? Okay. But this did feel different. And it did feel like the core, members of this team, the real important ones, were all in on Matt coming back in 2026. Now, Micah Parsons, meanwhile, said he wants to be ready for week one, but he says the more likely timeline for his return next year would be week 3 or week 4, most likely. So you could, I still think that there is a decent chance, just being safe with him, that he ends up on the PUP list to start the season, and you just give him that 4 weeks of rest and then bring him back, get ready to go for week five, and just make, you know, double, triple sure that he's okay. But I know right now, if there's any chance that Micah can even be back for week four, he will fight tooth and nail to not be put on that PUP list so he doesn't miss one more game than what he could. That's just the type of competitor he is. So that's going to be a battle between who's ever at head coach and Micah Parsons as to whether you want that extra roster spot and give him a little bit more time, or whether you want to, you know, keep him on the roster, bring him back week three or four, depending on how he's healing. He also said Jeff Hafley, this is Micah Parsons, said Jeff Hafley is not going anywhere. I think he said it smiling and sort of in jest, but you could tell a lot of the players, including Micah Parsons, are really hoping that Jeff Hafley is going to be back next year. Sean Ryan had a bone bruise, and that was his injury, not anything long-term. He'll be able to recover fine from that, and it shouldn't affect his free agency in any sort of way. Devontae Wyatt broke his fibula and tore a ligament in his ankle. However, he did say that he would be ready for training camp, so that's a great update from Devontae Wyatt. I'm sure, you know, he didn't love the injury, but him being ready for camp would be great. Tucker Kraft said that he will be 10 months post-surgery in week one, and he is ahead of schedule. And it sounds like Tucker's, you know, plan is to be ready to play week one, which would be huge for Green Bay, goes without saying. Nate Hobbs said, quote, "I promise you I'm going to be one of the best players on this defense next year," which is always one of those monkey paw sort of things. Does that mean, you know, if that comes true, that he got better than everyone else, he's better than Micah Parsons? Or does that mean that everyone else got worse and now, you know, Nate Hobbs is the same, but now everyone else sucks and is worse than Nate Hobbs? I'm kidding. I'm joking. I'm saying that in jest, but I will go back to this. The tape I watched with the Raiders, and I watched a ton of tape from him and with the Raiders, I graded his last season just like I would grade him as a Packer. And I really liked overall what I saw. Now, was most of that in the slot? Yes, but not all of it. And I thought he was a good, not a great corner, but he was a plus performing corner. I think I had him as like a plus one or something like that when I graded his last year. And in training camp, he looked like he fit perfectly in this Jeff Hafley defense. Like, he was flying around making plays, and it really looked like he found a home, even more so in Green Bay. And then he had the injury at the end of camp, and he had the injuries during the season. And I don't think he ever got his feet underneath him. And in fact, but before that last injury, now I will say, playing in the slot for a good chunk of it, he started to look like Nate Hobbs again, but then had another injury. I don't think it's far-fetched that he could have a much better 2026 than he had in 2025. I don't think that's far-fetched at all, because I've seen it with the Raiders. I saw it in camp, and we just, you know, had to see him, unfortunately, I think, go through some injuries in a difficult situation. So hopefully he's right, that he can be one of the better players on defense. We'll talk more in detail of like the option that Green Bay has with him, releasing him or not releasing him, and things like that. But it's a confident quote from Nate Hobbs, and hopefully he can live up to it, again, assuming he's still in Green Bay next year. Keyshawn Nixon, meanwhile, said that he played great and alluded to wanting to stay in Green Bay and wanting a new contract. Do with that what you will. I do not think there's any world in which Keyshawn Nixon played great this year. I do think that he probably wants to stay in Green Bay. I do not think he has earned a new lucrative contract extension by any means. And in fact, I think the more interesting conversation would be if you want to get off of his contract. I don't think so. I think he's going to be back on the, you know, remaining 1 year, $7 million deal, I think it is. You only save $5 million by releasing him, if I remember correctly. But either way, I expect him to be back probably on that deal, not with a contract extension. And you go from there. And if he tries to hold out or anything, I just think you cut him. I just think you say, all right, whatever, we're good here. Meanwhile, reserve future deals. We talked about this yesterday as well. All of the practice squad players, except for three, did get reserve future deals. Brant Banks, Dante Barnett, Carson Barnhart, Anthony Campbell, McCallan Castles, Dalton Cooper, Drake Dabney, James Esther, Lucas Haversick, Tyron Herring, Jamin Johnson, Damian Martinez, Mark Perry, Will Shepard, Pierre Strong, and Messiah Swinson all received reserve futures deals for Green Bay. There are only three that didn't. All of them are wide receivers. Julian Hicks and Keyshawn Johnson, who just signed last week, which makes sense. Isaiah Nair was the other one who just got called up for the postseason game. Now, it should be noted, just because he didn't get a reserve future deal on Monday doesn't mean he can't get one now, tomorrow, etc. But it was interesting that he was not on that initial list. And that would be one I at least keep a little bit of an eye on. Again, they just activated him for the playoff game, but he was the interesting one. Again, Julian Hicks, Keyshawn Johnson, Isaiah Nair, three wide receivers who did not get reserve future deals from the practice squad. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, whether you're starting a new routine or making player picks for the very first time, trying something new can be difficult. But in life and on Prize Picks, it always feels good to be right. And with high-pressure playoff matchups every weekend and elite hoops action every night, the action never stops. And Prize Picks lets you take control. Now, I love how simple Prize Picks is to use and how fun it is to play. This football season has been even more fun this year with Prize Picks, and getting in my picks for each slate of game has been a super fun part of each football weekend. And listen, I get we're all having withdrawals from our fantasy leagues being over with, so this is the perfect time to stay in fantasy game mode by using Prize Picks every single week. And if you haven't checked lately, Prize Picks is now available in all 50 states. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And again, make sure that you're using that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. All right, let's get to our main event, our main topic, Matt LaFleur. Again, the reports are that Green Bay wants him back, that he wants to remain a Green Bay Packer, but this is not done. At least as of recording this, it is not done. So let's start with the case for moving on from Matt LaFleur. And it's a pretty lengthy case. The biggest one that I think people will point to, and I think it's 100% fair, is he has 6 playoff appearances and 3 wins. Even if you had all of those wins in the same postseason, you better be the one seed. If you're the one seed and you get those 3 wins all in one postseason, you're the Super Bowl champion. But he's had 6 postseasons, has gotten 3, and has not sniffed a Super Bowl. Closest he got was an NFC championship game. And that's been a very disappointing aspect of the Matt LaFleur tenure so far, is the lack of playoff success. I don't think I'm breaking any news by saying that. 3 wins in 6 playoff appearances, 3 wins in 7 years. That is very underwhelming, especially based on some of the teams that he had, especially, you know, 2019, 2020, 2020, I should say for sure, 2021 as well. Like some really good teams there. And again, 3 wins in 6 playoff appearances. He also has 1 playoff win in the last 5 years combined. Combined. None in 2021, none in 2022, 1 in 2023, none in 2024, none in 2025. So 5 years, 4 playoff appearances, 1 playoff win. That's not ideal. He, of course, finished this last season 9-8-1. And in his last 21 games going back to last year, he's 9-11-1. So he's 2 games below 500 in his last 21 games. And you might say that's a random number, whatever, right? How about his last 74 games? It's also a random number, but that's a significant number. 74 games. In his last 74 games, he is 38-35-1. Only 3 games above 500. So, of course, the big argument, which we'll get to, is that, hey, he's got this awesome regular season record. Like, he's really good. And yes, it hasn't worked out in the playoffs, but he's really great in the regular season. All right, well, in his last 74 overall games, regular season and postseason, he's 38-35-1. Just 3 measly games above 500. That doesn't exactly instill a ton of confidence. That's not a great record. Are there some, you know, extenuating circumstances and things like that? Sure. But it's not where you want that team to be or those teams to be. Again, 38-35-1. Over the last 2 years, I've quoted this a little bit wrong as of late, so my apologies. I'll correct that now. He is 4-11 against playoff teams last year and this year. 4-11. And one of those is against a Rams team that had all of their receivers gone. You know, so that's what that is. One of them was against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, yes, they're a playoff team, but they were one of the last teams in and got, you know, immediately eliminated. And that doesn't take anything away from it. That was still a good win. But 4-11 against playoff teams this year and last year. That's not a great record. They have been merchants of beating bad teams more often than not. He has never won more than 1 postseason game in any season. So he's never even had a back-to-back playoff wins. Like, it's just one and done, or you get a win and then you're immediately done. So he's never had more than one postseason win in any season. He also hasn't won the division since 2021, and every other team in the division has won it during that time frame. So we're now, you know, 4+ years away since they've won the division. How about just general aspects of his coaching? I know that he has had different special teams coordinators, and Rich Bisaccia basically has autonomy over special teams. And I know that this goes back longer than, you know, before, well before even Matt LaFleur. But in 7 seasons, he has had catastrophically bad special teams under his leadership. And it has cost them in 2021. Last year, the opening kickoff. This year, with McManus missing multiple field goals, it has cost them over and over again. Cost them a chance to win the division with Romeo Doubs' onside kick failure. They lost a game in Cleveland because of a blocked field goal. The blocked extra point return for 2 points against Dallas was a massive swing in that game. Special teams has once again been catastrophic, and it has been far beyond what it, you know, you would ever want it to be in a negative way, and that can really lose you games, and it has lost Green Bay games. So that's been a huge issue in the Matt LaFleur era. Again, it's gone on well before that. It's probably going to go on after it too, but it's been an issue. The lack of overall improvement. 2023, you're feeling top of the world. You've got the youngest team in the NFL, and you win a playoff game that year, and you almost beat San Fran. You're looking ahead, and you're like, all right, this team's only going to get better. They're super young. They're going to continue to, you know, add experience, get older. And I know that they, again, brought in new rookies and things like that and are still the youngest team in the league and whatnot, but we haven't quite seen the growth from this team. Again, in fact, 2023 of the last 3 years has been the best one because they actually have a playoff win in that one. And so you haven't seen that growth from 23 to 24 to 25. 2019 to 2020, you saw great growth in 2019 in his first year. 2020, his second year, was even better. Then 2021 took a little bit of a step back to 2020. 2022 was brutal, and then you started a new sort of regime over in the Jordan Love era and things like that. So you haven't seen that significant improvement. Once they've sort of set the standard, it seems to just kind of hover around whatever that standard is. We don't know, need to go into great detail here, but clock management, game management, timeouts, challenges, all of that he has been subpar with. Or at least has not been consistent enough. He hasn't been good enough with it, and something that he needs to find a way to improve. You also, in the Matt LaFleur era, have the random no-show games. In his first year, a 26-11 loss to the Chargers that wasn't anywhere remotely even that close. You go to San Fran for a big game, and they lose 37-8. The next year, you have a massive game with Tampa, lose 38-10. You have an opening game against the New Orleans Saints that takes place in Jacksonville, and you lose 38-3. You've got an opening game against the Vikings in Minnesota, huge game, and you lose 23-7. It was never close. You have a Jets game. I think that was the one coming after the Giants game internationally or whatever, but you're expected to compete. They lost 27-10. You've got the Tommy DeVito game. You actually have momentum in your favor, and you're trending towards a playoff spot. And all of a sudden, you go to the New York Giants to play Tommy DeVito, and you lose to Tommy DeVito out of nowhere. This year, a loss 13-10 to the Browns. You, with the division still very much, you know, a possibility, you lose 41-24 against Baltimore, and your defense basically no-shows that game. So you have these random moments where you expect, and again, you're going to get beat from time to time. I'm not saying that, but against either extremely inferior opponents or against good opponents where you're not even competitive, there's usually about 1 to 2 of these just no-show games per year for Matt LaFleur. Of course, one of the big ones is we continue to see the same mistakes over and over, the self-inflicted wounds, the penalties, the bad special teams. So we've seen this story before. We see these same mistakes continue. We've seen lack of execution and lack of focus. From a play-calling standpoint, I think he's a really good play designer. The play calling can get Jekyll and Hyde. There are moments where he looks like the greatest play caller on earth. And the stuff that he did with the spinner series with Malik Willis and winning those 2 games, that was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And then there's other games where it looks like the most bland, boring game plan, or even within the game, it looks like there's times where like, oh, he's ahead of them by a billion years. And then like there's a next drive and you're like, oh, they just ran inside zone three times. Okay. Like it's a very Jekyll and Hyde experience with this play calling. And certainly we've seen when they get a lead, it doesn't feel the same as when they were trying to battle for that lead. Complementary football has been a problem for this team. All three phases playing complementary to each other during the course of any game. Of course, we know about the blown fourth quarter leads, especially this year. I don't think he's been good at hiring coordinators and assistants. Now, Nathaniel Hackett, I don't know. He hasn't worked out anywhere else really since. Maybe he was a good offensive coordinator, but again, it's really tough to tell, you know, with the offensive coordinators in Green Bay because of just the situation they're in. Steno seems fine, but Joe Barry was a terrible hire. He didn't get really any say over Mike Pettine. Does seem like Jeff Hafley's a good hire, but in all of his special teams for hires have been just brutal. Have been brutal. All of them have failed. And Mo Drayton and John Bonham, was it Bonamago? Or I forget who the one right before. No, it wasn't Bonamago, I don't think. But either way, doesn't matter. You know, his special teams hires have been really bad. And he's probably been a bit too loyal to those assistants, especially Joe Barry and you know, some of the special teams coordinators, Rich Bisaccia, probably a year too long in a lot of those scenarios. So he hasn't done a great job of that. Now, I do think he's found a really good coordinator in Jeff Hafley. And Steno, I think, is fine. I think he's good. I don't, again, it's tough to judge. But overall, I don't think he's done a great job with his key coordinators and, you know, getting the right ones to help him succeed at a high level. I think there's been a question about physicality and toughness. I also talked about this with Mike Wall of just, I've talked about this before too. I don't know that the fit with Goody is, I think they get along great and I think they work together really well. I'm not behind scenes. I don't know that for sure, but there hasn't seemed to be any rumblings of any issues. But it does feel like Matt, if you give him a good experienced football team and good players, he can out-scheme anybody. But it does seem like, you know, if you're going to give him a draft and develop team, he's going to get them ready to go out and play the scheme, but it doesn't feel like there's, you know, maybe quite the technical work or the growth from those side of things that they're putting the time, effort, and energy into to continue to get better at their craft, which would make it so that you can execute these plays at a better level. I think we have to know, you know, we won't know, but if I were making this decision, I would want to know what changes he's going to make just to his style of coaching, but also, you know, what changes are you making on your staff? The contract, again, is a huge thing here of, hey, I don't know that I want to give you a four-year, $65 million deal or whatever it takes. And that could make things very complicated. I don't think Green Bay in Matt LaFleur's tenure has handled injuries well at all. The fact that Zach Tom was trying to play on a partially torn patella tendon this week does not seem right. You've had the Jair Alexander situation. You've had a variety of others, and we don't know. Maybe Green Bay was in the right on all of these, but you know, Christian Watson coming back last year in week 18, like there's just been a lot of those moments. Heck, even Javon Bullard playing in that preseason game and Evan Williams playing in that preseason game a week ago. There's just been some situations and decisions with that sort of stuff that have gone completely awry and have even set players back with their injuries. So that, I think, needs to get better. I also think it's worth noting that his seat next year would be insanely hot. And there's going to be a lot of pressure on him and this team to perform because he is an established coach that people wanted gone going into this year. So if you keep him, just worth noting, he's going to have a very hot seat. You know, I think sometimes he gets too emotional in his decision-making and he kind of flies by the seat of his pants and what he's feeling in the moment. I think he has to have a little bit more of a analytical and calm approach to those situations. People will say it's stale. I don't think it's stale yet with Matt, but you could make the argument. I don't think it's there. And I think the reason is because these players churn out so quickly that this has been basically the team for like the last 3 years and guys are still coming and going or whatever. But I don't see the stale message quite yet. Of course, there's a stat out there. Only two coaches have won the first Super Bowl after 7 years in the league. John Madden in his 8th year, Bill Cowher in his 14th year. No other coach has won their first Super Bowl in over 7 years in the league. And that's where Matt's at right now. And then of course, this Bears game this past week has, you know, just, it was, as I said, the perfect, you know, just coming together of everything that's kind of gone wrong in the Matt LaFleur all in one shiny playoff disaster. And that leaves a real, you know, bitter taste in your mouth and sick to your stomach feel because of, you know, how these things have gone down, and that he just doesn't feel like they're learning from it. So those are the reasons, and maybe you have a few more, but those are the reasons why I think you could say, hey, maybe it's time to move on from Matt LaFleur. And that's a pretty lengthy list of reasons. I also think there's the reason to keep Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur is 69th all time in overall wins for any NFL coach. He has a 76-40 record. Of the 78 coaches who have, you know, the most wins in NFL history, only Blanton Collier, Ray Flaherty, Vince Lombardi, John Madden, George Allen, Tony Dungy, Paul Brown, George Halas, and Don Shula have better winning percentages. So of the 78 coaches who have won the most in the NFL history, he has the 10th best winning percentage of any of those 78 coaches, which is pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive. I think the big thing for me is, I think the first thing we should say is that the players clearly want him back. He has not lost the locker room, and they are giving him ringing endorsements to come back next year. I think that goes a long way, especially if you're Ed Policy and you're in the building. And I think that's extremely important. If he doesn't get that, I think he's out. And I think it's a very similar Jim Harbaugh situation. I would give him a ton of credit for his work with the quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers won two MVPs in his time here. Jordan Love has played at an unbelievable level. And even when Malik Willis has gotten in, he has played at an extremely high level, to the point where he probably parlayed that into a starting job next year, or is going to. So I think his work with quarterbacks is insanely impressive. But the other thing is, I feel like Jordan fits extremely, extremely well in this Matt LaFleur offense. And I don't want to upset that apple cart and say, hey, we're going to bring in a new offensive coordinator, a new head coach that's going to call the plays. And we're going to maybe make it a little bit more detrimental to Jordan because he fits so great with what Matt's doing. It's inherently going to be different. Maybe it doesn't go quite as well for Jordan Love with whatever new regime would potentially come in. I think Matt's offensive mind is phenomenal. I think sometimes he gets a step too ahead, and I think sometimes he needs to figure out what his, you know, sort of vision for any given game is, what his vision for the season is, and figure that out. But I do think he's a very, very smart offensive mind. They've made the playoffs in 6 out of the 7 seasons. Only one time in his career have they not made the playoffs. And that one time, they basically made it to the play-in, right? They had a play-in game against Detroit. They had a big 4-game win streak at the end of that year before that Detroit game to try to get back into it. It didn't work out, but they have been competitive every year. And the only year that they weren't, they were 8-9 and one end of game situation away from being able to get to a playoff in every single year under Matt LaFleur. So he's been incredibly consistent in that regard. Aaron Rodgers again is giving him ringing endorsements. The players want him back. Hasn't lost the locker room. He only has one losing season, and that losing season is 8-9. Again, so 1 game below 500. The floor is very, very high for a Matt LaFleur team. Very, very high. I do think there's a consistency and a comfortability that comes with Matt. I mean, you kind of know what you've got. You're going to have a good competitive team every single year. And listen, I know that might not be what you're looking for. You're looking for Super Bowls. So am I. But I will say, I know how the Packers think. They like that stability. And Matt LaFleur definitely brings it to the table. We'll be right back. I also think you have an open window for the next couple of years here. And the entire idea of going and getting Micah was to, you know, accentuate this window. Well, that was with Matt as coach and everything. And you know the injuries that took place. You know, I think you can make a real argument that he's had a real hand in helping get this team to where it's at right now. And now it's ready to potentially win a Super Bowl if everyone's healthy. Like, go let him have that opportunity. I think it's the right thing to do. And I think hopefully he can pay it off. But that's another one where, again, I think you have this open window. And by the way, at the end of this window, you're going to have to make a ton of changes anyway. And if you have to add Goody and Matt to that list and start kind of from scratch, I think you could definitely do that too at that point in time. The other thing is, I just don't think there's better options. I think he would be the best coach on the market if he were available. I think multiple teams would be setting up interviews immediately. I think he'd have his choice of multiple jobs. And so I'm hesitant to say, yeah, fire this guy and then not have a great plan for who's going to replace him. And I don't have a great one right now that I feel comfortable with replacing him. It's just a really poor coaching market. And so sometimes you're better to keep what you have rather than change just for the sake of change. We talked about Jordan Love and the importance of his continued development and just the level that he can play at in this offense and with Matt LaFleur. They've been the youngest team in the league 3 years running and continue to make the playoffs every single year. Never set him back, never complained, just got to work with Jordan Love and consistently found ways to win. Thought that's been really impressive. You know, I think the Rodgers to Love transition deserves a ton of credit. Going from a Hall of Fame quarterback to a quarterback who had one start under his belt at that point and was very inexperienced and yet still finding a way to make the playoffs and get a playoff win that year, I think was really impressive. I do think there's been a lot of extenuating circumstances and injuries that have been surrounding his seasons that have derailed things. And if he could just kind of get away from that, I do think he would be in a good spot to go out and, you know, kind of make any sort of run in the postseason, or not just postseason, but through the season and maybe the postseason. I do also feel like you never feel like you don't have a chance going into a game. You always feel like with Matt in this Packers team that regardless of who they're playing, they've got a chance to win it. Now, I've said they've had some crap the bed games, but you don't feel that way going in. You always feel like Matt can put together a winning team game in and game out every single year. I really like the way that he handled the suspensions for guys like Jaire Alexander, Romeo Doubs. I thought those guys came back after those suspensions better, more motivated, and they were able to kind of course correct, shut down those behaviors and make them better for it. I think that really goes down to coaching as well. Yeah, I do think that what a lot of people don't get to see that I have been able to see just with, you know, being behind the scenes a little bit more, meaning with the credential and things like that, is I've been in practices, training camp, OTAs, mini camps, rookie mini camps. Matt is a player's coach, but he walks the line really well of being a player's coach, but holding players accountable. And he'll get after players in practice. If you think that there is a lack of toughness or something in that regard from Matt, it's just way off base. He will get after players in practice. I've seen it on numerous occasions. And I don't even go to all the practices. And we're certainly not there for the crux of practices, but I've seen him on numerous occasions get after players when he needs to. So I think he walks the best of both worlds very, very well. Last but not least is you might have a candidate in mind who you want the Packers to get as their head coach. But one thing I will just remind you is it's not your decision. And I'm not saying don't cheer for somebody or I'm not saying any of that. What I'm saying is sometimes be careful what you wish for. Matt could get fired and you might have a list of 15 coaches that you're cool with and then like five that you hate, and they could easily hire somebody from the five that you hate. You don't know who they would hire. For me, I don't think they would do this, but like, I don't want Cliff Kingsbury. I would be very disappointed and frustrated if Green Bay went in that direction. And if you're willing to say, well, like, all right, let's move on from Matt. We don't have any control as fans over who that next coach is going to be. It could be somebody fun and awesome and great. It could be somebody that you're just immediately like, oh dear God, what have we done? Just give me back Matt. I'll do anything. It could easily end up being way worse. So sometimes, again, just be a little bit careful what you wish for as well. You know, I think what I'm ultimately saying here is that there's pros and cons on both sides. You've probably, like I said, made up your mind already. I'm not trying to sway you one way or the other. I think if you were making the argument just based on my arguments, I think the list of moving on from Matt LaFleur is more damning than the case for keeping Matt LaFleur is more enticing or exciting. But that doesn't mean it's necessarily the right way. It really doesn't. And I do think that, again, there are plenty of reasons that you could look at Matt and say, I get it. I understand it. And maybe, I don't know if there's people that are excited about it, but would at least at minimum understand why you would give him this chance to go out this next year and prove himself and show that he can get this team to where it needs to go. I talked about the other day of like where I'm at with this. And I don't mean to like, first of all, I don't mean to both sides of this right now. But I could legitimately see both sides of this. I mentioned the other day, I thought maybe it was time to move on from Matt. I can still see that side of it. I really can. That's a really brutal loss to Chicago at the end of the year. That again, had all of the things that have cost you over the years, rear its ugly head in one game. And that's really discouraging. Really, really discouraging. Again, I still have a lot of, I don't know, faith is the wrong word. I still have a feel, just call it a dumb gut feel, that Matt is going to be able to come back to Green Bay and still win at a very high level and have that magical run at some point in time. I can't prove it. There's nothing I can do to do that, but there's just a piece of me that does ultimately believe that. But I will get either direction. If I hear tomorrow that they're, you know, moving on from him, or if they're trying to get trade compensation from him, or if they sign him to a 4-year, whatever million-dollar deal, I will understand all sides of it. I really will, because I do think it's a nuanced and complex conversation. But you get to choose your own adventure. Based on what we laid out today, again, you're saying get rid of the guy. I get it. There's plenty of evidence there to say that might be the right move. If you're saying, hey, I think he's really good, and I think he can put a team together still, or with Goody that is going to have a chance to win the Super Bowl, I think you can still go in that direction. And I wouldn't hate it. I really wouldn't. I think there's still something there for Matt. So again, choose your own adventure. Pick your side. You know, for me, if Matt's gone, Brian Flores as head coach with Mike McDaniel as offensive coordinator, somebody like Christian Parker as defensive coordinator, yeah, I could be totally into that. Especially if you get some sort of draft compensation along with it. Yeah, heck yeah. I could be talked into that. And if you told me that Matt was going to be back, but they're not making any changes, Rich Bisaccia is back, Luke Butkus is back, it's just the same, I would have major issues with that too. And I would say maybe we do need to go in a different direction. So there's a lot of moving parts here, and I don't think it's a cut and dry decision. The biggest thing is that the Packers have a massive, massive decision to make, and they have to get it right. Whether it's Matt or whether it's some new coach, they've got to be able to come in next year and have a team that's ready to compete for a Super Bowl and get them ready to not only compete for, but win a Super Bowl in 2026/2027. A huge moment for really the first major moment for Ed Policy and company, and one that will kind of shake the foundation of this franchise, whatever happens both now and in the future. That's going to do it for me today. Hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. If you did, again, make sure to maybe check out those Packaday memberships or give it a like. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donnelly, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Guestford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkle, Stinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhardt, Richard Morales, Les Nienau, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, Nemo, Jay Koner, and Donald Decker. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.